produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Wednesdays here on the Audio Stash, we have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, the editor of the new book, Pot Politics, and author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. Links to the books can be found at normalaudiostash.com. Dr. Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York and graciously allows us to ask questions about the science of cannabis each week here on the Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Happy to be here.
And today we're discussing the newly revised article from Normal's Paul Armentano, Cannabis, Mental Health, and Context, The Case for Regulation. And we have links to the full report at normalaudiostash.com. Mitch, the ONDCP and drug czar John Walters have persisted in using false claims that smoking pot can cause, quote, depression, thoughts of suicide, and schizophrenia, close quote. Mitch, you've done a lot of research regarding depression. So again, does cannabis consumption cause depression?
We do have a couple of longitudinal studies that suggest folks who start using marijuana early in life, like teens and preteens, do show a couple more depressive symptoms in the long run. Unfortunately, it's just not enough to make a big deal out of, and I'm afraid it's not going to have the impact on prevention that we'd like it to have. To tell a teen, hey, if you smoke pot, you're going to get clinically depressed, just doesn't have a huge impact. And when you look at the size of the effect, it's not particularly big. These thoughts of suicide, of course, sound pretty disturbing, and I wouldn't want to see anybody have recurrent thoughts of suicide. But the idea that cannabis is the cause of these is still not supported. A lot of these studies are done with big samples of folks who have a lot of other problems that aren't at all related to cannabis use, like not enough money, not enough time, difficulty in school, and things along those lines. So the notion that cannabis is the source of any of these disorders just doesn't have a lot of research support.
And perhaps the most terrorizing rhetoric used by the drug czar right now on the American public is to bring up schizophrenia. First, Mitch, let me ask, how does someone become schizophrenic?
Schizophrenia is extremely rare. Certainly less than 1% of the population in the U.S. has this disorder. It's also extremely debilitating, and I don't want to imply that it's not extremely serious. It seems to arise because of a genetic propensity, a certain heritable component, in combination with some pretty severe stressors, often stressors that occur in utero, while the schizophrenic is still a fetus. So Sarnoff-Mednick has some data suggesting that if your mother has schizophrenia and she happened to get the flu during the second trimester of the pregnancy, you'd be extremely likely to get it. But extremely likely means, you know, 5% instead of 1%, not that you're more likely to get it than not. The impact of cannabis on this is, you know, extremely minor. I think Wayne Hall did one of the best summaries of that literature and basically said the idea that your chances of becoming schizophrenic would go from 7 in 1,000 to 14 in 1,000 if you were a heavy cannabis user during adolescence, I mean, that's almost laughable. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Nevertheless, there are 5 longitudinal studies suggesting that some of the symptoms are more likely among folks who use cannabis early in life. These folks, again, aren't randomly assigned. It's not like we go around and have an experiment where some people are told to smoke cannabis and some are not. So it's unclear if they're led to cannabis based on some of their early schizophrenic symptoms or if perhaps there's something that would lead folks to cannabis that is correlated with these early schizophrenic symptoms, or if really there's some kind of bias in the way that schizophrenia is diagnosed.
Yet the case can be made, and Paul points this out in his paper, that those who know they have schizophrenia should probably not use cannabis.
I would encourage folks with psychosis, any of the psychotic disorders, or who have psychotic members of their family, if you have a schizophrenic parent, to stay away from cannabis. We've got some pretty compelling data to suggest that schizophrenics are more likely to have a psychotic relapse, meaning they'll start hearing voices and start experiencing really unusual things if they're using cannabis and using it regularly. It's not a toy, as we've said time and again, but I'd make the same cautions about too much caffeine, about alcohol, about certain antihistamines. So it's clearly any mental illness is something that makes you sensitive to psychoactive materials and something we should all watch out for.
Mitch, I'm also struck that these conditions, depression and thoughts of suicide, are something we hear mentioned almost constantly as side effects for dozens of drugs being aggressively advertised and marketed to Americans. Yet those drugs that have these proven side effects are perfectly legal.
I mean, this may say something about the desperation in the drug czar's office, but in truth, depression and thoughts of suicide are extremely common among teens, and it's so normative, in fact, that I'm worried about it. I like the idea of regulating any substance that has an opportunity to contribute to these, but we don't really have the data suggesting that cannabis is the cause. Alcohol consumption, which is extremely high and often correlated with early teen use of cannabis, certainly contributes to depressive symptoms, and we've known that for years and years. But you don't see anybody, you know, thinking we should go back to alcohol prohibition, God forbid.
Mitch, you mentioned the unfortunately common factor in teens for depression and thoughts of suicide. Has this gone up in the last 10 or 15 years?
Absolutely, and it's unclear if that we're just better at diagnosing it or is society really tougher now. I think it's an interesting clinical lore that teens are asked to do markedly more things than they used to, that everybody's overscheduled and things like that. But the bottom line is just taking time to do happy things, to enjoy yourself, to do things that matter and work that matters is one of the best buffers against these kinds of symptoms. And teens, of course, are, you know, going through a lot of both biological and societal challenges. And so I think letting every teen have the chance to blow off some steam, to cut teens some slack whenever we can is the way to prevent this, not, you know, suddenly throw people in jail for possession of a plant.
And in the context of marijuana being safer than alcohol, we're saying you likely can't make yourself depressed by smoking cannabis, yet it's my understanding that even what's considered social alcohol consumption could physiologically lead to depression.
As it turns out, the withdrawal from alcohol, even the minor withdrawal associated with just hangover, has all these similarities to depressive symptoms, so it's hard to tease out what's an alcohol problem and what's clinical depression, particularly early in life. And, you know, cannabis is not harmless for teens. I don't want to suggest that that's the case, but compared to alcohol, this link to depression is markedly smaller.
And Mitch, is it reasonable to look at teens and the research conducted on them and then extrapolate to effects later in life?
We just don't have the data to suggest that's the case. There are some compelling data on brain development in heavy cannabis users during teen age, and it's clearly not a good idea for teens to use cannabis. But the notion that somehow 12 years down the line you're going to be clinically depressed just doesn't follow either biologically or psychologically, and we just don't have the data to suggest that that's really what's going on.
And is there a fine line here in research as to what's understood as intoxication and what is understood as psychosis?
In fact, that's some of my own work that's trying to address this idea. These notions that small psychotic-like symptoms are actually mimicking intoxication and vice versa is pretty clear. So one of my studies talks about schizotypal personality, which is in the psychotic spectrum, and one of the items on that scale is I use words in unusual ways. Well, what a surprise that cannabis users who have slang like chronic and 420, et cetera, say they use words in unusual ways. That doesn't mean they're psychotic. It just means they're part of an interesting different culture, so to speak. With that in mind, then, if you take that item out, suddenly the link between cannabis and schizotypal personality disappears. So there seems to be a small bias in the way we're approaching some of these psychotic symptoms that works against cannabis users, and when we pay more attention to that, this link between cannabis use and schizotypal personality disappears.
So as Paul very articulately points out in his paper, Cannabis Mental Health in Context, The Case for Regulation, the drug czar's rhetoric is certainly not to be feared, but legal regulation of marijuana would also be the best protection for those who do have to cope with things like schizophrenia to be aware of any possible dangers.
The idea that something that's affecting fewer than 1% of the population is anything to get worked up about is just, you know, a poor use of our time.
So in the end here, there's really no science to support these outrageous fear tactics utilized by the drug czar, and most Americans will not have any short or long-term detriment to their mental health from being a regular cannabis consumer.
In fact, the risk for dependence seems to be the only thing that comes up, and that's, again, not something that casual users have to drive themselves nuts about, but regular users do have that, you know, 9% risk or so of dependence. Again, I feel like cannabis dependence isn't like heroin dependence or something like that, but something to keep in mind about. And if folks will go to the normal website and see the responsible use guidelines, I think they're going to be absolutely fine.
Mitch, I want to thank you again today for helping us understand the truth and real science here.
It's always a pleasure, and looking forward to talking to you again.
I look forward to it as well. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is the editor of Pot Politics and the author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com. And thanks to Paul Armentano for his report, Cannabis, Mental Health, and Context, The Case for Regulation. We have links to that as well at normalaudiostash.com. Paul helps us with the news every day here on the Audio Stash. Next up today, we have an Audio Stash special report. Last week in Colorado, prohibitionists and reform advocates met on the steps of the Capitol building in Denver. The prohibition faction was led by Colorado's Republican Governor Bill Owens and the State Attorney General John Suthers, among other law enforcement. This was meant to be a rather sedate morning press conference by the powers that be, but the grassroots energy and activism of the members of SAFER, led by campaign director Mason Tvert, gave these drug warriors a wake-up call as to the support for marijuana law reform in their community. In our coverage of Friday's event in Denver, we'll hear interviews and audio gathered by Ari Armstrong. It's posted at his website, freecolorado.com. That site is a wealth of information and media covering Amendment 44. Again, that's freecolorado.com, and we have links to it on the Audio Stash website as well. Ari's done a spectacular job gathering independent media and represents the most honest and consistent coverage of the Colorado debate over marijuana. First, let's listen into Ari speaking with SAFER campaign director Mason Tvert.
So, Mason DeVert's here. It's about 9:35. Why are we here, Mason?
We're here because Governor Owens, as well as the Attorney General, are bringing out a bunch of law enforcement officials to suggest that we should keep marijuana illegal and continue to push people to drink instead. We think it's a bad message for Colorado, and we think it's unfortunate that our law enforcement officials are willing to take their valuable time to come out here and advocate for maintaining a $100 fine for something less harmful than drinking a glass of wine.
Don't you think it's odd that a couple of years ago, Bill Owens was promoting one of the region's largest recreational drug manufacturers, Pete Coors, for the United States Senate?
I think that's absolutely a good point. I think it's just a sign of our culture that our governor is willing to back the dealer of a lethal drug while taking time out of his day to come out here and make sure that adults in Colorado can't use a non-lethal drug. And it's unfortunate that he's pushing law enforcement people out here. And it's interesting that this is the first time we've seen Governor Owens, because he was quoted in the Rocky Mountain News back in December when we announced this initiative, calling for a statewide marijuana showdown, yet he's hasn't come out to talk about this once until a week before the election, and we're going to be challenging him to debate this issue further.
Don't you also think it's odd that Republicans claim often to support limited government, and people like Milton Friedman, for instance, who is a stalwart in the conservative movement, supports regulation taxation of marijuana? Why do you think that so many Republicans take the big government stance on this particular issue?
Because they're fear-mongers, and they want to maintain the status quo in which the money is flowing in not only for these offices, but in terms of the politics of this all. A governor who, quote, allows marijuana to become legal in his state is clearly a governor that can't be supported by many conservative folks these days. So they do whatever they can to show that they're so-called hard on crime, when in fact they're really producing more crime and more criminals than would be if marijuana were legal.
Thanks, Mason. We'll catch up later.
Mason was profiled in the Washington Times newspaper today, recognizing his unique ability to organize voters on the issue of marijuana reform. Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal, was there in Colorado in person to witness the support for reform in the Mile High City. Alan, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Thanks again for joining us. Alan, first, tell us what you saw, what you witnessed happening in Denver last Friday.
Well, it was a classic example of citizens tired of being lied to by their elected officials, confronting them, and the elected officials taking umbrage with such. And that was an amazing scene to behold on the steps of the beautiful capital of Colorado facing the Front Range, and to have this phalanx of law enforcement officers with the governor and the attorney general wanting to have a monologue, to virtually have a press conference where no one attended except for the media, except we interrupted their little prohibition party. About 140 citizens of Colorado, along with myself and the former chief of police of Seattle, Norm Stamper, confronted the governor and the attorney general and his minions in their press conference, where they came out a couple weeks before the election in Colorado against Amendment 44, which would, of course, legalize a small amount of marijuana for responsible adult use.
Alan, the rhetoric used by Bill Owens and John Struthers seemed to really enter into the extreme, even for prohibitionists.
Well, both of them came out with what I would presume were prepared remarks by the federal government and the ONDCP, the Drug Czar's office, a classic rip-and-read propaganda, which anybody familiar with the issues heard 1,000 times before. However, what really caught my attention was the governor declaring that Alaska had changed its laws and that there is no state in the union that has legalized 1 ounce of marijuana. That is a bold-faced lie. Any listener of this podcast well knows and has been well reported on this podcast that Alaska not only does not did not get rid of its marijuana legalization this past summer. It actually sort of redefined it from 4 ounces of marijuana that was legal until July 15th, and now it's 1 ounce is legal in the state of Alaska. And so to have a governor, a sitting governor, at a press conference throw out such a discernible untruth as that was pretty disconcerting for me to hear. And then to have the Attorney General, the state's chief law enforcement officer, get up and say what just floored me, that in the state of Colorado, they, quote, spend virtually no money on marijuana prohibition, unquote. Well, considering that for the last 10 years in Colorado, 60% of all drug arrests are marijuana arrests, the idea that the state and the counties and the city governments do not spend money on trying to enforce marijuana prohibition is obviously not only a bold-faced lie, it defies the reason why they're standing on the steps protesting the citizens' actions to change the laws. And most disturbingly was Governor Owens, who, despite in most people's minds being a polished politician, could not help himself. He got very, very angry at the crowd, who was not going to yield any quarter to their lies, and he bound down into the crowd and declared that we should all not be wearing green shirts, we should be wearing brown shirts, which, of course, is a reference to Nazism, that people in the audience, myself included, were not there trying to win basic freedoms in this country for personal autonomy. He equated it to taking people and shoving them into ovens to kill them. And I just found that level of rhetoric so appalling and so demonstrative of the lack of public civility and the lack of public discourse and the total lack of a public debate. Here was the governor on the steps of the Capitol decrying that this was a terrible example of a debate. Well, there was no debate. He's been the governor for 8 years. He's never once, not one time, been willing to sit down and meet with SAFER or NORMAL or other marijuana law reform activists to consider a change in Colorado law. So here he has this monologue press conference, and he was confronted by 140 citizens that are just simply tired of being lied to and gave it back to them in spades.
Also, Alan, it sounded like the regular residents, really the drivers in downtown Denver, were honking their support for Amendment 44 as well.
It was amazing. Before the press conference had got going, about 100 of SAFER supporters had lined the streets of a downtown main street going right in front of the Capitol. And here they are, just everyday, workaday people going to work and seeing these green marijuana leaves and these fluorescent chartreuse green SAFER shirts everywhere, and I don't think it's an exaggeration at all to say that more than half the cars that were driving by beeped their horns loudly and fists were in the air, so much so that myself and Norm Stamper and others who were being interviewed by broadcast media, both radio and TV, had to pick up their crews and go all the way around to the other side of the Capitol to get away from all the honking and yelling.
So it sounds like the SAFER initiative and Amendment 44, this has the type of real grassroots broad support out there, something that politicians don't encounter enough in this country.
They are. In fact, it's one of the reasons why NORMAL is very much partnering with SAFER this past year, and we very much look forward to the future for two major reasons. One is the narrative. They've struck the proper narrative. There's no debate about whether marijuana causes birth defects or whether marijuana causes schizophrenia. This debate now is, why are we treating marijuana users differently than alcohol users? And that has put the government up onto its heels and in a very defensive mode because, frankly, realistically, there is no sane answer to why you would criminally prohibit marijuana while allowing the social taxed use of alcohol. So that is a narrative that is powerful. The other thing that makes Colorado's efforts so much different than the rest of the initiatives in the United States right now is that it is truly grassroots driven. It is individuals who use marijuana for recreation and medical purposes out there on the front lines, raising money, going into the media, holding signs up at events. They are genuinely stakeholder driven. Arguably, in some of the other initiatives around the country where you've got basically rich individuals from outside of state funding what appear to be more front groups than genuine grassroots groups. No one who's been tuning into the situation in Colorado and watching the media and SAFER's efforts there would in any way be confused that Mason Tavert and SAFER are not genuine advocates for marijuana law reform, that they care seriously about themselves not going to jail for their own marijuana use. That's a lot different than some of the other narratives in the country where, for lack of a better term, it's a, you know, good government model where individuals are raising money and claiming they want to change marijuana laws, not because they themselves do not want to be brought into the criminal justice system, but because they would have us believe that they want good government. And so I think that my own personal view is that next Tuesday, the effort in Colorado will either lose by 5%, which would be amazing for the first time out for a statewide initiative, or, even more amazing, it could actually win by 1 or 2 percentage points. So no matter what happens, I think the entire effort has tremendous merit and value, and if it does not prevail next Tuesday night, I cannot imagine under any circumstance it not prevailing in 2008, the next election cycle, where the SAFER and NORMAL folks in Colorado have really laid down the grassroots to push this over the top.
Next, we're going to hear some audio from the event gathered by Ari Armstrong at FreeColorado.com. We have links to the site on the Audio Stash webpage. And again, many thanks to Ari for this wonderful independent reporting and allowing us to use these actualities. The entire event audio can be found again at FreeColorado.com. First, we'll hear from Governor Bill Owens and the beginning of the shouts of protest from the crowd as they respond to the completely false rhetoric.
Marijuana smoke is every bit as cancer-causing as is cigarette smoke, and legalizing the drug would encourage more people to inhale these toxic fumes.
When Colorado Attorney General John Suthers came to the podium, the audience was particularly vocal.
The thing that I find most troubling about the message of the proponents of Amendment 44 is their suggestion that marijuana is a safe alternative to alcohol. There is nothing safe about marijuana. In 1981, the average THC content in marijuana was 1.83%. In 2003, the average THC content in a marijuana cigarette was 5.62%. For high-grade marijuana, the THC content rose from 6.58% in 1981 to 14.1% in 2003. Corresponding to the increase in the THC content of marijuana is a six-fold increase in the number of emergency room admissions attributable to marijuana. There are now 4.6 million Americans who suffer from marijuana dependency. In 2000, there were approximately 250,000 people treated for marijuana use. 62% of teens in drug treatment today are there for marijuana dependency. The drafters of Amendment 44 were extremely sloppy. You see, under current law, if someone over 18 transfers less than an ounce of marijuana to a child of 15, the offense they commit is possession of less than an ounce. If the voters approve Amendment 44, they will be legalizing the transfer of less than an ounce of marijuana from an adult to a 15 or 16 or 17-year-old. That is truly irresponsible. Ladies and gentlemen, the only safe alternative to any form of intoxication is sobriety. We have significantly reduced the teenage use of marijuana over the last several years. This is no time to wave a right flag and surrender. I urge the voters of Colorado to vote no on Amendment 44. Thank you.
Here is what was heard as the prohibitionist press conference came to a close.
We're literally being shouted down by the other side.
That was the governor of Colorado, Bill Owens. The governor then descended the steps and into the crowd, directly in front of Normal Executive Director Alan St. Pierre, and delivered the quote of the day, picked up and rebroadcast by newspapers and media across the country, in which Governor Owens compares the audience to brown shirts, a reference to Nazism. We're going back now to Alan St. Pierre. Alan, what was it that brought the governor down those stairs in a simultaneous descent in his language and likely his political power as well?
Well, I think it was the fact that, one, it is definitely a personality conflict between the leaders of Colorado in the, at the state government level, principally Governor Owens and Mr. Southers, the Attorney General, and with Mason Tvert, the head of SAFER. He has clearly got under their skin, so much so, one of my favorite examples of such is all Mason had to do was raise his hand, and 150 people got into this extremely loud chant, and when Mason wanted to hear the governor speak, all he had to do was raise his other hand, and everybody was silenced immediately, and the governor laughed, "Huh, I wish I had that power." So I think at this point they're very frustrated with Mason Tvert's activism in that it's so effective that with little or no money spent, he can get the media to follow the debate, whether it's these fascinating and provocative ads, billboards they've got all around Denver, or whether it is their green shirts that you just cannot miss. It's these chartreuse green shirts just jump out at you immediately. And I think also that it was the tone of the protesters, myself included. I could not help, even myself, after 16 years of being engaged in this, after hearing somebody get up there and under the guise of law and governance to lie so profoundly to the people and the media, it was hard to resist. I mean, I found myself, you know, yelling at the top of my lungs, "Thank you for lying. Please lie some more." It was really, really a pathetic example of state government resisting the will of the people.
That was Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre. The debate over marijuana legalization, when framed in the SAFER concept of alcohol being much more dangerous than marijuana, has put the prohibitionists against the ropes, desperately searching for language with which to fight progress, common sense, and the better health of our society. As you can hear in Colorado, citizens are no longer willing to accept lies, and a public policy which condemns and prosecutes peaceful, law-abiding American marijuana consumers. This example shows that real grassroots activism, with regular Americans getting involved, honking horns, wearing t-shirts, attending events and rallies, and most importantly, casting their votes in favor of reform, are having a profound impact. SAFER Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation's website is saferchoice.org. Thanks again today to Alan St. Pierre for joining us, and a very special thanks to Ari at freecolorado.com for capturing and allowing us to present the event audio. We have links for more information at normalaudiostash.com, and complete event audio from Friday's press conference is available at freecolorado.com. This has been a Normal Audio Stash special report. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.